Welcome back to The Wise Man's Page, the daily podcast where we read a page of Patrick Rothfuss's The Wise Man's Fear, one day at a time. This is page 86, chapter 9, A Civil Tongue. My hair was still wet when I made my way through a short hallway, then up the stairs onto the stage of an empty theater. As always, the room was dark except for the huge crescent-shaped table. I moved to the edge of the light and waited politely. The Chancellor motioned me forward, and I walked to the center of the table, reaching up to hand him my tile. Then I stepped back to stand in the circle of slightly brighter light between the two outthrust horns of the table. The Nine Masters looked down at me. I'd like to say they looked dramatic, like ravens on a fence or something like that, but while they were all wearing their formal robes, they were too mismatched to look like a collection of anything. What's more, I could see the marks of weariness on them. Only then did it occur to me that as much as the students hated admissions, it was probably no walk in the garden for the masters either.
Quoth, Arladin's son, the Chancellor said formally, Rillar.
He made a gesture to the far right-hand horn of the table.
Master Physica.
Arwill peered down at me, his face grandfatherly behind his round spectacles.
What are the medical properties of Menka? He asked.
Powerful anesthetic, I said. Powerful catatoniate. Potential purgative. I hesitated. It has a whole sackful of complicating secondaries, too. Shall I list them all?
Arwill shook his head. A patient comes into the medica complaining of pains in their joints and difficulty breathing. Their mouth is dry, and they claim to have a sweet taste in their mouth. They complain of chills, but they are actually sweaty and feverish. What is your diagnosis?
That's the page. I'm Nick.
I'm Jordana.
I'm Jeremy.
Pages like this make me want to just keep reading. It's like a meal only halfway finished.
Oh yeah, we get right into it too, which I appreciate. There's no hemming and hawing. He blasts his way in. I wonder if that's the source of the name.
Yes,
there might be one hemming.
I think it's a little odd that the Chancellor takes the tiles. There's no bailiff or whatever who ushers people in and collects the tiles. Like, does the Chancellor have a big bucket of tiles under the table that he drops them in? I just think it's like a weird bit of admin that I can't see the masters actually doing.
You know what? I bet it's part of like the fusty old tradition where this all comes from. You know, this is the way they've been doing things for 1,000 years.
Oh, legit. Maybe the tiles are originally runes or something.
Yeah. Or like when the university had 5 students, it didn't make sense to have, you know, an administrative assistant to take the tiles.
Truth.
I love all of the sequences where Quoth comes up before the masters. But maybe that's just because I like scenes in stories that feel like they have a sort of ritual structure to them, which is, I think, why I also love any sequence of getting the team together, because you get to see different personality types interact. You get to see, I don't know, there's something about it that I really dig.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. I feel like there's not a ton to talk about because a lot of the meat is about to happen. I have an observation that I will continue to carry on until tomorrow's page, but I'll bring it up now, is that Quoth is ready to be tricked. On this page and on almost of all of the other questions that he gets so far, he's ready for a trick question. So he tends to ask a question to clarify before answering, and he usually has more answers ready. Like, he's really expecting to be kind of stabbed in the back by these guys. He's expecting to be tripped up. And I think that they aren't, except for maybe him, and we'll get to this. I feel like the masters aren't particularly interested in tripping him up. Like, I bet you Quoth has built this up more than it needed to be.
Well, I wonder if Quoth is a little on edge because his last encounter with the teacher involved being tricked into helping someone set a room on fire. I wonder if that would make him a little cautious.
Well, there's so much more has happened to Quoth than the masters know. He's been poisoned, so he had to swap his tile out. He has just been a party to a crime committed by a master on a master. But I feel like most of them, well, as they pointed on this page, they're tired. It's late in the season. I just finished thesis defenses, and it was very clear. You could really see the profs getting more tired as the defenses went on. There was much more energy in the early defenses. In the late ones, they were more like, all right, you know, let's wave you on through, give you your degree.
I think it's also worth reminding ourselves that there's a lot riding on this for Quoth, right? Because if he doesn't get his tuition set low, he's really boned because he has no money. So he has to answer as thoroughly and as best as he possibly can, because that's his best shot at getting a low tuition.
Mm-hmm. But again, I wonder if he's built that up too much. He's been told to expect a high tuition, and so to expect hard questions. But it seems like most of them aren't actually asking him trick questions. They're just asking him pretty rote stuff, and he's maybe built it up too much.
Better to be over-prepared than under-prepared.
Yes, this is true. But I almost wonder if he's too defensive, and if he talks himself into a higher tuition by being, you know, too clever.
Well, he's asking questions really... Sure, he's asking them because he's defensive, but I'm not sure that he's really asking them in a defensive way. So for the Masters, him asking for clarification is not really a bad thing to them, would it be?
Oh, no, I agree.
If anything, I'd say that that shows that he is starting to learn from what Elladin was trying to teach him. He's trying to be really sure that he's answering the right thing as thoroughly as possible.
Yeah, and oh, that's a good point, that this is something he's just now learned from Elladin, to pay very close attention to what's being asked. So maybe Elladin was teaching him, maybe Quoth did learn a lesson. But also, in the real world, this is a very good, not just a learning tool, but a very good communication tool. You ask questions to make sure you're understood. The knee-jerk reaction by people tends to be that asking questions feels like a weakness and people don't like to do it. But actually, asking questions shows that you are willing and able to understand and put yourself in the vulnerable position. It's actually an act of, it's a powerful act to ask questions.
Yeah, and it follows like right into like right out of school and into the workplace, because the second last job I had, they're like, oh yeah, the person who came here before you, they got fired because they didn't ask enough questions. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll ask a lot of questions.
Totally, yeah. There's nothing to lose. If you don't know something, ask about it. Someone knows, and then you can learn it and be better.
But a lot of people, myself included, have the anxiety of, if I ask too many questions, then they're going to think that I don't know what I'm doing and they'll fire me, right? I should just know everything, which is like an incorrect assumption to make, but it's an assumption that a lot of people do make.
Totally. I have that too. But I remind myself, like, if someone asked me this question, would I think less of them? And the answer is always no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm always very pleased to answer questions. And it also shows that you're willing to learn, and you're willing to admit that, hey, I don't know this, but I want to know it. Better that than pretend you know something that you don't.
Mm-hmm. And get boned later. It also, one of the things that this scene and other scenes like it, where Quoth has to sort of go through the admissions process, they are useful tools for the author to give us some idea of what Quoth is learning in the classes that we don't see him take. Because we don't actually spend a lot of time following Quoth around the Medica, but we have some idea of what he's learned based on the questions that Arwell asks him and the answers he gives, right? So he's learned to sort of do on-the-spot diagnosis. He's learned the effect, like what different drugs are and what their effects can be.
What to expect from certain symptoms.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we'll talk about this on the next page, but some of these things he's learned through firsthand encounters, not through academic work, but through making himself sick, which also suggests there's a lot going on that isn't on the page. Not just him going to classes, but a lot of his work and the things that happen to him, the travails, don't get talked about at all in the story.
Yeah, and again, I think that's just an instance of Rothfuss having to choose what to focus on.
But it also makes the character and the world feel more rich.
Yes.
Like, there's more going on than we need to know, and that makes the world feel more lived in.
Yes.
As always, what goes on in your head is more interesting and more well-realized than anything that could ever appear on the page or on the screen. So let the reader do the work.
It's worth having these details because they enrich the story, but it's not worth spending a whole scene of it happening because it doesn't enrich the story that much.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We're having so many agreements lately.
I know. I think we crave an accord just because we've been social distancing and
I can't give you all a big hug, so this is the closest I can get.
The closest we can do is just be nice to each other.
Words to live by.
Yeah, that's actually really, really touching and insightful, Jordana.
Okay, sure.
We have a relevant letter from Kelsey on page 46, Dana's history. Kelsey writes, "Hey, pagers, On this page, Kvothe makes a big deal over how much training went into his oh-so-perfectly executed bow and all of his court manners. Then in the direct next sequence, Denna curtsies as graceful as a falling leaf. I feel like this is a real hint to show she's been through some significant amount of training, whether self-taught or not. Maybe similar to Kvothe in his bathhouse, is Denna spending tons of time on her looks and behavior to play her part well too? And what does this say about her childhood if we know Kvothe's training goes back to his? P.S., I'm sure you're getting this a lot, but I'm really appreciating this podcast during current events. I find it super comforting getting to listen to your normal banter. It's keeping me cheerful and entertained while I'm sitting and sheltering at home.
Signed, where I say, do we attack that letter from the top to bottom or the bottom to the top?
You lead, Jordana. We'll follow.
Very well. Okay, I'm going to start with the whole Denna thing because I was thinking about this the other day, actually, and considering it now, very valid read that, like, it's an interesting thing to think about that she might be practicing these things too, but I was sort of thinking that maybe Kvothe just thinks that she's bowing as graceful as a leaf, so that's what he's telling us, but what if her bows are just kind of regular bows and he's overemphasizing it the way that he often does with things about Denna, right?
I think that's a really good observation. I am equally willing to believe either that Kvothe is looking at her through rose-colored glasses, and also because I do kind of feel like she's his mirror. She's going through the same journey, but on the opposite side that she is practicing.
It would follow, like, character-wise what we know about Denna for her to be practicing, because obviously you would want to practice that sort of thing if you're going to be hanging out and dating nobles.
Yeah. But I bet you he's also coloring it a little bit.
Yeah, six of one, half a dozen of the other, kind of happening there.
Mm-hmm.
And also on the bottom part of this letter, just sort of thinking about how good or bad we might be to listen to during the current crisis, is that we haven't actually published yet. As of this point when we are recording this, we haven't yet published anything we recorded during the crisis. Right?
Technically, yeah. I don't know if you need to peel back the curtain far.
What I'm wondering is, like, what if our banter got worse and we just don't know?
Jordana, our banter game has always been strong. If there's one thing that COVID-19 can't kill, it's our bits.
Yeah,
the bits will live forever. The bits will live 1,000 years.
Once more, the bits will rule the galaxy.
Once more, unto the bits.
Dear friend.
I was naive to think that anything could ever stop you two from ranting. Never mind.
Cry havoc and let slip the bits of war.
Hey, wait, what is that quote from?
That's a Julius Caesar, I believe.
Okay. Because I'm pretty sure that quote is also, if it's a Julius Caesar quote, that would make sense.
It's like from the play Julius Caesar.
It has Julius Caesar in it, so.
There you go.
Yep.
He said that shit all the time. He was just like always talking about those dogs of war and letting them slip. He caught them slipping even.
Yeah, well, he greased them up. You know, they were always
they were
getting
slipping and sliding all over the forum.
They were getting into the olive oil.
Love to have some oiled up hounds.
All right,
damned
well,
bit.
We have oiled up hounds.
How'd I say?
Tomorrow on another page.
Hang on, I want to keep doing this bit where we're doing Shakespeare monologues, but with bit instead.
All right. I can't help you. I don't know any Shakespeare monologues.
Nick, we'll do that bit tomorrow on page
of
the bit.
And as soon as I said that, I was like, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty bit from day to day until the last syllable of recorded podcasts. And all our yester bits have flighted fools the way to dusty death.
Dusty bits! Out, out, brief bit! Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player who struts and frets his hour upon the pod. It is a bit told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.